Blog Talk Radio.
Time away the hour, conversing with the flower, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be another Lincoln if you only had a brain.
Oh, I tell you why, the ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before, and then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nothing, my head all full of stuffing, my heart all full of pain. I would dance and be merry, life would be a king of dairy if I only had a brain.
Good evening, September 21st, 2009. Welcome to Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Mike Cadell. We got two big stories coming out about Kansas. Read about them on the Fight and Cockfire. Definitely some big stories. Tonight, David Swanson, two broadcasts back-to-back on his new book, Daybreak, which broke out and knocked Glenn Beck off the Amazon.com book list, at least for a few days. Like to call in tonight. Take calls after the two Swanson broadcasts. First one, was recorded on the Mike Malloy Show, guest hosted by Brad Friedman. Now, if you haven't checked it out, you know, the last broadcast was with Brad Friedman. It's called the Brad Blog Live. It's on the lineup there at the Flyer or at Discomfort Magazine or at Discomfort Images. Three blogs that I run. Each has a lineup. You can play them anytime, or you can go to the Blog Talk Radio webpage at any of the three blogs and dig around. But the last show was Brad Friedman, who hosts Brad Blog. He guest hosted Mike Malloy's show, which is located at MikeMalloy.com. And on it, on September 7th, David Swanson appeared, last September 7th. The second broadcast will be a tape-recorded interview I conducted with Mr. Swanson about his book and about his perceptions of the current state of affairs. last Friday. So enjoy. Here is Swanson on Malloy for the next 37 minutes with Brad Friedman.
Happy Labor Day weekend weekend. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, live from amongst the charred and blackened hills of Los Angeles, where the fires have been unbelievable over the past week. I suspect we'll be talking about that with Desi Doyen, my co-host on the Green News Report, tomorrow. What's that? You don't know the Green News Report? That's because your station ain't playing it. Why? I don't know. Call them and ask them. Anyway, we are here live. We're doing it live. F it. We're doing it live. We're doing it live on Labor Day. And we will take your calls along with David Swanson, who will be joining us hopefully momentarily this hour. 877-520-1150. Let's see. Swanson, no, he might be late. All right. Well, we will check on that in a moment. Frankly, I didn't even have enough time in the previous hour to really shove it up Mr. Beck's hindquarters as I would have liked to, nor was I able to shove it up the hindquarters of the folks in this administration, like Rahm Emanuel, like Barack Obama, who have, to quote Rush Limbaugh, bent over and grabbed their ankles. Because the Fox News thought police said it was wrong to ask questions about 9/11. You're not allowed to do that. Yes, Glenn Beck will warn you. He'll tell you. He'll say, we ask reasonable questions here in unreasonable times. He'll even quote Thomas Jefferson and urge his listeners and viewers to question with boldness. He doesn't often read the full quote from Thomas Jefferson. That full quote, by the way, question with boldness even the existence of God. Because if there be one, he must more approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Now, what if Van Jones had asked with boldness, had questioned with boldness about the existence of God? Would that have gotten him run out of the administration by Glenn Beck? What if he had asked about the existence of God on Fox News? Imagine what would have happened in that case. Definitely going to talk about this more in the third hour, because the fact that Obama did not stand up for one of the few progressives that he bothered to put in his administration. Jane Hampshire wrote at Fire Dog Lake, if there is going to be a serious progressive movement in this country capable of standing up for health care against an industry that spends $1.4 million a day on lobbying, we can't just look to the members of the Progressive Caucus in Congress and say, hey, you, get something done. No, they need cover. They need to know that they will be supported, she writes. And people like Van Jones, who have given their lives to causes we say we value, like prison reform and environmental advocacy, need to know that they will be defended and not handed over to Glenn Beck as an acceptable casualty in the battle for K Street dollars. Because that's exactly what happened. And when you heard the caller in the last hour saying, I don't know if we should bring Cheney to task, that would hurt Democrats electorally. Are you kidding me? You do the right thing. You follow the rule of law. You follow the Constitution. If you're so damned worried about keeping your party in power, you may as well be a Republican. And by the way, that quote from Jane Hampshire over at Fire Dog Lake, I noticed, was also quoted right now over at BuzzFlash.com, where our friend Mark Carlin, I was chatting with earlier, and talks about they're having a tough time right now raising funds because they're being so critical, he writes, of Obama's centrist strategy. And that's what the caller was calling in about in the previous hour. Well, we've got a lot of centrists out here. So apparently centrists don't believe in the rule of law. Well, I believe they do. I believe doing the right thing and bringing accountability to these guys is the center of this country. And I believe we need to thank folks who are saying that out loud, whether it's Jane Hampshire over at Fire Dog Lake, who's been fighting like hell for proper health care reform, whether it's Mark Carlin over at BuzzFlash.com. Media isn't free. You got to support the progressive media. You got to support those people who are standing up for the right thing and who aren't buying into the centrist BS. There is no center. Getting worked up on Labor Day. Maybe David Swanson will help me out. He joins us. There we go. Okay, we do got him. He joins us now. David Swanson. Oh, let me get David. I got. Just wait. Wait right there, David. There we go. Okay. Wanted to get the proper notes for you because you deserve it since you, David, are now a best-selling author of the new book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. It was out just last week from Seven Stories Press, and I'm happy to say it displaced Glenn Beck, at least for a day or so, on the Amazon.com bestseller list. David shot to number one, displaced the liar and the charlatan and the political terrorist Glenn Beck. So David Swanson, he's also the creator of AfterDowningStreet.org, and too much more to get into for the moment. David Swanson, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, my friend.
Wonderful to be here, Brad. I've been listening. You're right on, as always.
Yeah, and I'm sorry that I had to eat into your time there, but, man, has this irked me, I got to tell you. And, I hope that you'll have some answers for us from your book, David Swanson. It is. I haven't gotten to read it all yet, but I started to peruse it a week or so ago when you were kind enough to send me a copy. From as far as I can tell, David, this book is a remarkable achievement. You have taken the last 4 years, perhaps the last 8 years, of so much of what the blogosphere has been talking about, trying to get out there, been ignored for so many years by the mainstream media, the corporate media, and you put it down on paper. And, well, I'll have more nice things to say here but in a second about this, but bringing all this together and saying we need to undo the imperial presidency in the bargain, I guess we have to start by asking, well, what is the imperial presidency as you see it, David?
Well, part of what I look at, and the bulk of the book, is how do we envision what we want and how do we get there and how do we make changes. But part of the book is looking at the situation we're in, and a big theme of it is the incredible acceleration during the past 8 years of the transfer of powers to the White House, powers that belonged in the Congress and in some cases in the courts and in the hands of we the people. Mm-hmm. And this is not a new thing. It's a very long ongoing process since George Washington was president, but incredible acceleration so that now presidents make laws with signing statements and executive orders and secret memos and eight other ways. And we think of presidents as making laws, and we complain that the new president isn't writing the health care law instead of letting Congress do it. Presidents make wars. Presidents, we think of presidents as having the power to decide when to end wars and begin new wars, and we just launch strikes without calling it a war. Presidents decide how to raise and spend money and who to give it to. And we don't think of Congress as having the authority to decide where and how and when we spend money. We have presidents now make treaties, and not just treaties, but treaties of war, a treaty with Iraq for 3 more years of war without any ratification by the Senate. And these abuses and these powers that were seized by Bush and Cheney are not being given back. by Obama, and that would be unprecedented. That would require a saint. But the Congress isn't taking them back either. And we're seeing claims of secrecy that Dick Cheney never dreamed of from the new administration, and Congress barely fighting back. And so I think, you know, if we're going to have a government that represents us, it's going to be through the Congress. It's going to take a heck of a lot of work and a lot of cleaning up the Congress, but it's not going to be through one president. And to leave all of these powers in the hands of every future president is just suicidal.
I concur, but I'm worried about what happens when the Congress doesn't seem to give a damn either, because it seems like, oh, we got our guy in. He's a Democrat now, so everything's okay. I would argue, and I suspect you, David Swanson, would probably argue, no, it's not okay. And so we're going to talk about how you then hold Congress accountable to get these powers back to the more representative body that is Congress, that represents the people. Speaking with David Swanson, Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We'll try to take your calls this hour. David's going to be with us for the whole hour. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. And we're going to get you on a landline. You're in the middle of your book tour, David. Thanks for taking the time out here while you're on the road from Ohio, right? Somewhere in Ohio?
I'm in Ohio on a cell phone, but I'm at a landline. So if you want to switch, let's do it.
We'll do that right during the break. Brad in for Malloy. Stick with us. To the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Malloy, speaking with David Swanson of the best-selling, I like to say that, best-selling author of Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency, Forming a More Perfect Union, which just came out last week. I urge you to buy it. I urge you to support it. I urge you to send the message that progressive books matter. No, we don't have these houses buying up hundreds and thousands of these books to catapult guys like David Swanson to number one on the New York Times bestseller list the way Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter have. We got to do it the honest way, and we don't even have a TV show, an entire TV network, and a radio network to push it the way Glenn Beck is able to do. So, David Swanson, that was a remarkable achievement, climbing to number one on your first day out last week, my friend.
Yeah, I hope some of those people bought the book because they wanted the book and didn't just want to knock Glenn Beck out of first place. But that was a great thing. And
that was a great incentive.
Yes, indeed. And it's a horrible, horrible book he's written. Actually, somebody wrote it for him, I believe. It's Glenn Beck with Joseph Carey or something like that. But, you know, very well said. And the honest way also includes buying it and then writing a review and putting that on all the bookseller websites. And then everybody reads it and buys it. So I appreciate all your help, Brad.
Well, let's talk about my help. We ran a review over at our site, and I know you so well that I thought, well, let me stay out of it and let someone else review it. The vice president of the
Center for Constitutional Rights.
Thank you, sir. He reviewed it and said that he gave a good review, but he said that, David, you say that the Congress is the more representative body. They need to take back that the power from the president. But he was critical slightly by saying, you don't explain how. What do you do if the Congress doesn't behave either? Then what, David?
Well, I do explain that at great length in the book. I think Peter's complaint was that I didn't explain why you could possibly reform Congress and you couldn't possibly reform the president. And I think that's a typical American complaint is, you know, but, you know, how can we fix up 435 or 535 corrupt people when we could just fix one, a superhero, and then give him all the power as a benevolent dictator to just give us everything we want and ignore the Congress? Wouldn't that be so much easier? My congressman's such a bum, and now I can lobby the president, and he loves me. And I think that these are, you know, this is not how Peter thinks, I'm sure, but this is how many Americans
think.
That's
Peter Weiss at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think you know, it's an absolute fantasy to imagine that we can lobby one individual as effectively as we can lobby 535 people spread around the country, which we can do very easily. This morning I was at a Labor Day parade here in Ohio, and I spoke with Congresswoman Betty Sutton, and I said, will you vote no on any bill that doesn't have a public option? And she gave me a hem and a haw and a fudge and a, you know, I love a public option, we must have a public option. I said, is that a yes? Are you going to commit to this? And I had to ask her three times, and she did. And she said, I will vote no unless it has a public option. And then I asked her, well, why did you co-sponsor John Conyers' bill for single-payer health coverage in the last Congress, but not in this one, not when it's an actual live issue and could make a difference?
Right.
And she feeds me a line about how, well, I can do more on the committee if I'm not co-sponsoring a good bill. Which, as far as I know, makes absolutely no sense.
I could do more on the committee. She's saying that she can change the other bill if she's not a sponsor of the single-payer bill? Is that what she's trying to...
That's what she's saying. Makes absolutely no sense to me. And obviously we know that the president and the leadership have told them not to support single-payer, and she is obediently doing so. I barely got to trying to ask why she voted for the war supplement. She's coming back to Ohio next weekend for a funeral of a soldier. And is there going to be anybody there who asks her why in June she voted for more money to fund the deaths of more soldiers? Here she goes off on this Labor Day parade throwing bubble gum at the parade watchers. Is anybody asking her these questions? And are the activist groups who are organized to work on these issues even asking the questions?
That's what the activists have to do. I got to get into a hard break here. We'll pick this up after the break. Speaking with David Swanson, give us a shout, 877-520-1150. What to do when your congresswoman man isn't paying attention? Put a Republican in instead? Really? Brad, in for Malloy, more after this. Back to the Mike Malloy Show, live on Labor Day night. The sun is setting out here in the west. Beautiful out there tonight, although you can still see some of the smoke out in the distance from the fires in the Angeles National Forest. Largest fire in the history of L.A. County. It has been burning for a week. Firefighters suspect it's going to keep going for another week or so, but they do have it under control. The temperatures have gotten a lot cooler out here in Los Angeles, where I, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, am sitting in all week for Malloy. Check out the new chat tool over at bradblog.com for show purposes only. While the show is up and rolling, we've got a lively conversation going on in there. Go check it out at bradblog.com. Participate. Doing my best to keep an eye on that. And you can give us a call. We will take them this hour for David Swanson, who is with us for the rest of the hour. 877-520-1150. Next hour, we're going to be talking more about Van Jones and how ticked off I am at everybody on that. And tomorrow night, CIA, 27-year CIA analyst, Ray McGovern will be joining us, as will Mike Rogers, for a big gay hour. And I believe Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org will be joining us to talk about who is now going to be counting almost every vote in America. Hint, it's no longer going to be Diebold. And that's not good news, by the way. All right, David Swanson is still with us here, author of the new book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. You may know him from afterdowningstreet.org. He also wrote the introduction to the 35 Articles of Impeachment and the Case for Prosecuting George W. Bush that Dennis Kucinich introduced on the floor of the House, and all of the Democrats looked the other way, acted like there was nothing going on. These aren't the droids you're looking for. What do you do, David Swanson, when the Democrats you talk about in Congress, the ones who need to be held accountable, who need to hold the president accountable, who need to take back the imperial powers that Bush usurped for himself, what do you do when those Democrats don't do the right thing? Throw them out? Put in a Republican?
No, that would not be my proposal. Throw them out would be fine.
Uh-huh.
And obviously we need reforms that make it possible to throw them out.
Well, we've got a two-party system, as you know. If it's not a Democrat, it's going to be a Republican, David.
Well, I want to change that system.
Me
I also
too.
Want to change the Democrats, and primaries are a good place to do that. But I also want to take a lot of emphasis off elections, because our job as citizens begins primarily the day after an election, and who is in there does not determine how they act. What we do to them while they are in there, above all, determines how they act. And we've a lot of progressives for the past 7-8 months have had an attitude that I think would appropriately have followed a coup, not an election. Following an election, your responsibility, your respectful responsibility, there's nothing inappropriate or disrespectful about it, is to tell them clearly how you want them to represent you. And we have a president who goes out and quotes FDR asking us to tell him and to force him to do what needs to be done. I don't know if he means that or not, but that is right.
Yeah, he says, make me do it. Make me do it.
He says, get out there and make me do it. Well, I don't know if he means that, but it is absolutely right, absolutely appropriate, and he's asking us, and we're still not doing it. Actually, we're starting to. People are starting to come around, not because they figured out that they should have been doing their duty as citizens in a democracy starting back in November, but because they're disappointed, and they're overly disappointed because they expected way too much from an election all by itself. Elections alone do not change anything, and when you think they will, you're guaranteed to be very, very excited and then very, very disappointed. And I'm starting to get encouraged. I'm finally a little bit hopeful, as everybody else is facing despair, because I think a lot of people who are now disappointed are going to stay active. They're not going to go crawl under their beds. They're now going to do what we should have been doing all along, and that is using the media, building the media, using citizen activism, lobbying, phone calling, emailing, faxing, sitting in, demonstrating, street theater, putting our bodies on the line, going to jail, and doing what has to be done in a civilized nation, especially one with such a corrupted election system, to get these people to represent us.
Well, I'm glad you're encouraged. And I know you wrote about that over at your own personal site today, davidswanson.org. I'm not quite as encouraged, and we're going to get to the phones in a second. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. 520-1150 if you have a question for David Swanson on any of this. Pretty broad topic here we're covering because it's a pretty huge book. But I'm not as encouraged, and I'll tell you why. You talked about elections and reforming elections. And as you know, that's a big point for me, and I thank you for covering it in some detail in the book. but the media... The bad guys still own the media. And when we look at the White House website, the day of the inauguration, I ran at Bradblog a very encouraging story I saw there on the website. It was just a little squib, but it said that one of the things they were going to encourage, one of their new ideas, was to encourage diversity in the ownership of broadcast media, promote the development of new media outlets for expression of diverse viewpoints, and clarify the public interest obligations of broadcasters who occupy the nation's spectrum. I was very encouraged by that, David, but in looking at this Glenn Beck, the control that these guys have over the media, I went back to that page. Guess what? The page is there. That paragraph is now gone, David.
I believe it. There have been many similar changes on the White House website, as on the transition website and the campaign website, and there have been many promises broken and cast aside, and many promises that were never made that people fantasized had been. But we aren't going to get change from a president. We're not going to get change from just electing a president. If we're going to get it, we're going to get it through Congress, and there is a chicken and egg problem. We have to fix the media and all of these other systemic breakdowns, but we also have to be active now, and we can be, and we can succeed. Much harder things have been done than what we're talking about here. I think the media is the number one excuse for inaction and wrong action by Congress members. They will always tell you they're afraid of being attacked by the media. I think the president's current approach is absolutely disastrous. You don't give someone like Glenn Beck what he demands and assume that he's going to now like you and then stop similar demands. He's putting out requests for help, researching his list of targets for the next set of heads he's going to demand on a platter.
So the
all defense all the time strategy is not going to work, but that applies to us as activists as well.
Well, you know, a caller asks, and apparently he's doesn't want to come on the air, but he asks if we are aware. Maybe he means, am I aware, that Bush is no longer president? Well, I'm aware that he's no longer president, but I haven't seen a lot of change in the policies, and I haven't seen the Congress holding his feet to the fire. We're trying to hold feet to the fire, but, it goes around and around, Dave. It's very discouraging.
I'm not sure I agree with the caller. I mean, in what sense is Bush no longer president? If Bush were in his third term now, we would still be in Iraq without any sort of withdrawal. We would be expanding and escalating in Afghanistan. We would be continuing the policy he began of these strikes into Pakistan.
Right.
We would have laws being rewritten with signing statements and created with executive orders. We would have a defense of these laws by secret memos.
Mm-hmm.
We would have documents released only at the last minute that courts required it, with huge sections redacted. We would have a bad apple strategy for prosecuting past crimes, picking off some of the lowest employees and granting immunity to higher-ups. We would be cementing in place this idea of preventive detentions. We would be expanding claims of state secrecy to block court cases and maintain immunity. We would be seeing in broad form exactly what we're seeing now, except that there would be an anti-war movement. There would be a peace and justice movement. They wouldn't have defunded them because Bush would still be in the White House. Now, I'm not wishing he was, and I'm not saying there's nothing that's changed for the better. But in terms of the broad picture of presidential power and abuse, not much has changed.
Dorian in the chat, and bravo. Dorian in the chat room says the only way we can begin, this is in the bradblog.com chat room, the only way we can begin to clean up corruption is with campaign finance reform, and Dorian says it will not happen. I tend to agree, well, at least with the first part, that campaign finance reform is needed big time in a big way. If we decide that it will not happen, then, yeah, I guess it won't. But if we do something about it, if we raise enough hell, it will happen. But we have got to not roll over on ourselves. Pat in St. Joseph, Missouri, my home state, has a similar thought here. Welcome, Pat, to the Mike Malloy Show. Have a question for David Swanson.
Yes, I've been listening as a former government teacher. This has been very interesting to me. But I really think that, yes, we can lobby our congressman, but we have one here that it wouldn't matter what we did, he wouldn't listen to anything. I think what we need to do is push hard to redo the redistricting, gerrymandering, et cetera. You know, in the old days, you could have 125 seats back and forth in every 2 years. But I think as long as congressmen don't have to worry about getting reelected, then it's going to be very hard to get him to listen.
Well, first off, who does that redistricting, though, Pat?
Well, Well, see, that's right. That's right. We have to change to a system maybe similar to what Iowa does or whatever. We've got to take redistricting out of the hands of the politicians. You know, it's like having a game and letting your, you know, the people playing the game make up the rule. You know, that's crazy. That's exactly what's happening.
Well, and I want to let David have at this in a second. But, you know, Pat, if let's say we do redistricting somehow, the states are able to figure out how to do this fairly. If you don't get the money, the corporate money out of the campaigns, as Dorian had mentioned in the chat room, ultimately, what has redistricting done if this, you know, is still a corporatocracy, which is really what we've got here, Pat?
Well, I agree with that, too. I mean, you are right. I mean, it takes, and the problem with that is, though, we get all that money out, and then I've seen this before, I've been involved in politics, then you end up with really the grassroots type people have little chance to win either, because oftentimes it takes a lot of money for the grassroots person to get a shot at it. So, you know, I really don't have a good answer for that either. I don't know unless we publicly finance.
Well, public financing sounds good to me. Thanks for that call, Pat, and take care of my precious Missouri, my friend. David Swanson, we got to get to a break. 30-second thought on that. We'll pick it up on the other side.
We may see a ruling in the Supreme Court on Wednesday that makes the campaign finance issue much, much worse, and whether that helps us turn it around and make it better remains to be seen. The redistricting is something I actually agree with Glenn Beck on, who puts he scatters decent proposals through with all the insane ones in his book, remarkably making the insane ones sound sensible. And he's gung-ho against campaign finance reform, of course, but all of those people who are buying that book and lapping it up are for, because they take orders, they are for cleaning up this bipartisan redistricting disaster. And if we could mobilize them into action together with the rest of the sane population that also wants to clean that one up, I think it would be a good place to start.
David Swanson, author of Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. It's just out. It's fresh. Go buy it. Brad Friedman in from Molloy. One more segment with David. We'll take your calls, 877-520-1150, and then all calls next hour. We'll open up the lines. Get in line. Molloy Show, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Molloy, speaking with David Swanson. Just a few more minutes here. Then we're going to open the lines wide up after I have a word or two to say about Mr. Glenn Beck and about so-called progressives who will do anything, really, for Barack Obama, for Rahm Emanuel, because... we'll talk about it next hour. Give us a call, 877-520-1150, if you want to get in on that. Or a question for David Swanson, author of Daybreak. This thing just out. And, David, I know you're in Ohio, right? Did you see the president today, by the way, out there?
I was not in Cincinnati. I was glad to see the president mention both the public option and the Employee Free Choice Act down there.
He mentioned it. Mentioned it. Not much more than that. Look,
no, nothing more than that. And absolutely useless. And I just have to say, if these people were serious, they would throw out the filibuster rule. They would pass a complete progressive agenda in a month. They would pass the Employee Free Choice Act, build a serious labor movement, come back in a couple of years and pass single-payer health care. I mean, they are keeping in place a rule that allows senators who represent 12% of us to block all legislation by both houses. Why? Because they want to have that anti-democratic tool if the Republicans get back in power. And why will the Republicans get back in power? Because the Democrats are leaving the filibuster rule in place and doing nothing, and it's making people very, very angry.
Rick in Los Angeles has a thought on campaign finance reform, as we talked about. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Yeah. Well, just one point, and I want to get one point in on this subject. I think campaign finance reform really should have led the deck this year after the economy. I don't think any progressive reform has a hope of being passed the way the deck is stacked right now.
Thanks for the call, Rick. I got to get to a break here, so okay. Thanks for the call. You know, how do you get campaign finance reform from the people who are dependent on that money for their campaign finances, David?
We make it harder for them to ignore us than to listen to us, and we do it at the state levels, too, and we do it step by step if we have to. We do it for judges. We do it for Congress members, but we have to do it, and we can do it, and we've done much harder things. But we have to push other agenda items as well.
We do. This is a tough fight. Anyone who thought it ended with the election of Barack Obama has another thing coming to him. David Swanson, you have been fighting this long fight for a long time. I suspect you'll keep doing it for a long time. And your book, 20, 30, 40 years from now, if the Rush Limbaughs and the Glenn Becks are still on the air, if they're not in jail or in insane asylums, I hope they will be cursing your book and your name, David Swanson, because you spell it out in this book about what the hell we all have to do to rise up and to take our country back and to stop being fooled by, well, anybody.
Thank you, brother. Keep up the great work, Brad.
Enjoy the rest of the tour. We look forward to seeing you when you get out here to Los Angeles. Thank you, David Swanson. Check out that book. We've got links over to it at bradblog.com. Find it, buy it, get it. Take your country back. We're going to talk about more on that. Have I mentioned the jerk Glenn Beck lately this segment? Yeah, okay. Much more on him and what progressives need to do to take their country back. Why are we still talking about this? 877-520-1150. Your calls all next hour. Would love to hear from you. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. In for Malloy. Oh, stop by the chat room, too. We'll be back.
Boy, isn't Brad Friedman crazy? That's pretty good stuff, isn't it? Oh, my dogs are going crazy. Well, before they drown out the microphone. Well, there's some good news. Two court cases going on. An ethics complaint against Stephen Maxwell, former assistant attorney general for Phil Klein, recently had an ethics complaint filed against him. It'll be up on the board on the fight on the flyer later tonight, as well as my take on it. I've been reading over the case file, the complaint. You can get that at the kansaswatchdog.org, the actual copy of the complaint. That's kansaswatchdog.org. Also, Ellen Brown, a regular contributor to Links, a contributing writer, sends me her links regularly. A landmark finding by the Kansas Supreme Court detailing something that could very well spill over across the borders of Kansas and across the country, involving the electronic transfers and bundling of home mortgages. Yes, it could involve up to 60 million mortgages. landmark Kansas Supreme Court decision. That'll also be linked later tonight. Just Google Ellen Brown, landmark Kansas Supreme Court. You want to get it now while it's hot. Now this next upcoming clip runs about 32 minutes, and it's me, yours truly, interviewing Dave Swanson. Well, that's it. September 17th, I believe, when he was in town at Kansas City, Missouri. You missed it. Don't tell me. I know. You missed Mr. Swanson in Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas missed Mr. Swanson. That won't happen again. Yeah, I'm happy to announce that the North Jefferson County Transition Initiative Center is going to start having lectures and book reviewers, people like David Swanson, in the hall in Valley Falls, Kansas. Beautiful Valley Falls, Kansas. We're preparing the meeting hall. We'll be bringing in speakers to talk, people with new books, and probably throw out this winter a lot of free chili and coffee. Well, this, without further ado, here's Dave Swanson. And now the first part of the interview, the first minute, was mangled, so I cut it off. I never edit my interviews. I always let them run. We have no commercials. And so I had to, it was mangled. The audio was pretty bad. So I put it on. I cut that part off. And you're going to jump right in with me talking with Mr. Swanson for the next 32 minutes. After that, phone calls. We'll accept some phone calls. And I'll give you the number after on the backside. Here we go. David Swanson, Kansas City, Missouri.
Active citizens.
Now, where is the... You know, when you started this book, you started writing this book during the Bush administration, correct?
I started working on it about 12 months ago and revised it in the meantime a little bit. But based on the publisher's schedule, it was just published September 1st, It was, of course, updated in that process. So I look at the history of the country and the past 8 years, but also the first months of the new Congress and the new presidency and the trajectory that seems to be maintaining the abuses of power and the systemic shift of power to the White House from the Congress and the courts and the people. We aren't very rapidly undoing the damage.
Yes, that's what I was. My next question was, well, what do you? I mean, okay. I think there are certain things that President Obama today, Senator Pat Roberts, and Kansas Senator Brownback gave some welcoming sigh of relief to the fear-filled people of the great state of Kansas who were. Had been absolutely terrified by them themselves, by the very same senators, in the fear that the Camp Gitmo would be moved up here to Fort Leavenworth. And they more or less said that. I mean, these people are reminded of that scene out of Michael Moore's 9/11, Fahrenheit 9/11, where he tells people to how they, that one congressman, I can't, he's the psychiatrist or something, he tells them, you know, we've been. Where they turn the fear-o-meter up and then they turn it down. They train us like dogs. And that's sort of been what Brownback and Senator Roberts has been doing over this Camp Gitmo thing of moving up here to Kansas. Well, they've turned the fear-meter down a little bit, but they've got this aftermath out here nationally. Here in the state, I don't know about nationally. But people out here are still sort of suffering the effects of the Bush bizarro world. You know, they're still in a state of fear. The teabag movement. I mean, the undoing of the presidency. I'm wondering about undoing. The damage done to the people. You know, these attacks on President Obama and the Democratic Party have not let up. I mean, it's gotten more vicious, don't you think?
Well, if criticism of President Obama and of the Democratic Party counts as attacks, then I'm complicit and engaged in it every day. I think we have an absolute responsibility as citizens to hold elected officials accountable, to praise them when they do right and to criticize them when they do wrong and to demand better. And that goes for the current crop as any other. But, you know, what Bush and Cheney did was to demonize a whole segment of humanity, dark-skinned, foreign, Arab, Muslim terrorists, most of them, of course, having had nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. But to depict these people as animals who couldn't be talked to, couldn't be given due process
right.
Couldn't be tried in courts, had to be locked up like animals, in order to scare us. I mean, a lot of the reason for torturing them was to depict them to us as animals who couldn't be spoken to. And then we were to give up our rights because those people couldn't have rights. And then you come to the point where you have the senators from Kansas afraid to lock these evil demons up in Leavenworth, which is apparently now a place that you could just wander out of if you feel like it. And this, you know, this is primarily now serving as a justification for stripping us all of our rights. I mean, when we throw out habeas corpus, it's gone. When we give up the rights that the Magna Carta began for us, the right to presumed innocence, the right to confront your accuser, the right to a speedy trial, the right to an attorney, when we roll all of this back and we allow spying without warrants, we allow detentions without charge and torture and so forth, this is for everybody, not just the people who don't look like you. We give up these rights, they're gone for everybody, so we have to fight to bring them back.
Well, where would you have fallen down on the most recent, this last weekend? Now, we're speaking on April 16th here today, or 17th, just the week
before. I believe
before.
It's September.
Huh?
I believe it's September.
Oh, excuse me, September. Right, you got me on that. But, you know, did you watch the C-SPAN stuff last weekend, or have you heard about this march? I mean, some say it was 65,000. Glenn Beck today was saying it's 1.7 million people now.
The organizers claim 30,000, and that's an exaggeration. And the entire thing's importance is exaggerated. This is a small minority of people whose views have been completely voted out of power, who ought to have the barest relevance to any primary discussions of where our country is to go, but who are extremely overrepresented by mega conglomerate media outlets that share their interests. And in fact, in the case of Fox News, are the primary organizers. You know, this media corporation, one of the largest corporations in the world, is one of the main organizers. Others include front groups for oil companies and health insurance companies and so forth. This is a sham of democracy. It's a pretense of a grassroots movement that organizes a minority of people around misinformation to rally for things that corporations want, and then is treated as one half of a debate as if it represents 50% of the American people. It deserves to be confronted and misstatements refuted, but does not deserve the respect of being discussed as if it is a major force in this country.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure there's many of my neighbors out here would disagree with you on that. And now I'm inclined to agree with you. However, people out here are under the spell, or what, for lack of better terms. And
do you have a poll to show that? Do you have a survey of people in your state or city that suggests that, you know, that the crazy views put out at these teabag events are majority opinion, that a majority believes, you know, that Obama was not born in this country, and that, you know, health care is going to kill grandma and so forth? I haven't seen that.
Well, about everyone out here I talk to does listen to Glenn Beck, and this is the state that somebody shot Dr. Tiller in the head in Wichita, Kansas. And on April 15th of this year, I saw the aerial photos of at least two of the rallies, and there was Chris Steiniger, who is running, senator, who may or may not be running on the Democratic ticket for governor. He went to one tea party in Overland Park or Johnson County, and in Topeka they had one, and it was estimated, the estimated crowds were probably 16,000 statewide on April 15th, 2009, in 13 different locations across the state. That's 16,000. That's almost half of your of what you claim, what you say the organizers are claiming at the thing that last weekend. So they must all be here in Kansas.
well, you know, there's a lot. There are a lot more people than 16,000 in Kansas, I applaud those people who think they're doing the right thing who go to these rallies. I applaud people who think they should be active citizens making their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud people who get organized and speak up. I agree with the handful of sane points that you can find scattered through the insane treatise that Glenn Books, you know, ghostwriter, puts out as a book that, in fact, is at the number one spot in bestsellers for political books across the country. I mean, I agree with people who are upset that we have gerrymandered districts, that we have a system corrupted by money, that incumbents in Congress are virtually unremovable. They have essentially lifetime appointments to run our government. People who are upset about the behavior and the quality of reporting by the media, people who are upset at the power of parties and want independent representatives. I agree with all of that. And with the rage at these banker bailouts that has transferred the wealth unearned as yet from our grandchildren to Wall Street bankers, I second that rage. But then to take all of that and misdirect it into anger at black people or poor people or immigrants or gays, or to equate a safety net for working people with the bailout for the bankers. I mean, what the Glenn Becks of this world do is to take understandable frustration and misdirect it in the way that the corporate rulers of the country want it misdirected. They would much rather see these people who want better jobs and better pay and better health care and firmer rights and freedoms angry at black people or immigrants or anybody other than those actually responsible for stripping of us of these things. So, you know, I'm not going to denounce people for going out in the streets. We need more of that, but they need to be a little better informed about what they're doing.
Yeah, well, look, this is a vexatious situation for me because, on one hand, I was thinking, well, just today I was listening to him. I don't listen to him regularly. I've been studying him, if anything, to organize local boycotting or at least contacting his local advertisers on Topeka Radio and organizing our email, our listeners on Radio Free Kansas, and the readers of the flyer and my other outreaches in the community to suggest to drop their advertisement for Glenn Beck. There are some local Topeka advertisers on the blowtorch of a radio station, WIBW 580, out here that has him on every morning. And a lot of working class guys that I talk to, we get in, his show and his arguments continually popped up. And today, I've been sitting around, I'm thinking, well, once this guy, he's always talking about killing himself, you know, and he encourages everybody to pray, and I keep thinking, well, he's going to, Color of Change has launched a successful advertising sponsor infomercial thing, you know, where 60 advertisers on it, national advertisers on Fox have dropped it, shifted their revenues towards other avenues of Fox, according to some people, but they've dropped sponsoring Beck. I was thinking of doing something here on the grassroots, and I know there's a bunch of people that would probably help me, but a lot of the hard-headed guys out here that I visit with, they keep going at this thing about Beck's arguments, some from a racist point of view, and many from the, you know, like you were saying about the bankers, that's simmering. All I have to do is bring that up, and they use that as an example of what's wrong with the government. And it's a mess. It really is a mess. But basically, I think they're just angry, Mr. Swanson. They're just angry in Kansas at the, I'm not sure what. But, I mean, we've got two.
If you're not angry, you're not paying attention. I couldn't disagree with any anger. We need a lot more of it, not hatred, not viciousness, not violence, not threats, not incivility, but anger, absolutely. My God, we have lost our representative republic. We have given all power to a president, and at any given moment, half the country worships that president and the other half hates him, depending on what initial he's got after his name. We've given all power to a monarchy. We have stripped people of rights and welfare. We've transferred working people's hard-earned wealth to a tiny upper class. We've given the treasury to bankers on Wall Street. Absolutely, that's outrageous. But so is spending the majority of the rest of the money we spend on wars and the military. And you won't hear these people complain about that. The largest military budget in the history of the universe. They could blame that on Barack Obama if they chose, but they won't, because it's okay to kill people. It's just not okay to save people. Can't spend a dime on health care, but you can spend our children's fortune on wars and military. So it's, you know, in some ways it's worse than they're telling you. But it's absolutely right to be angry. I think going after local advertisers for somebody who's such a destructive force as Glenn Beck is very, very useful. And you can go to Color of Change, or you can go to Democrats.com, which I work for, and find national advertisers and push them to pull out, which is working. You know, at least half of them have pulled out. Doesn't mean it'll get him off the air, but it helps.
Well, you know, I heard a strange sequence, and this has been so pretty hectic 3 weeks, but I understand that Color of Change, with their announced informing Beck's sponsors, came first, and that the resignation of Van Jones came afterwards. This was a Beck, a Beck organized counterattack to Color of Change. Does that chronology, to your knowledge?
The boycott campaign was well underway and beginning to succeed when Beck demanded Van Jones' head, and Barack Obama said, "Oh, sure, here it is." Presumably thinking that now Glenn Beck would like him and be nice to him, whereas, of course, Beck immediately put out a list of the next bunch of people he wants fired. You give people like this 90% of what they want, and they will call you a foreigner and a traitor and a socialist and set out to destroy you.
Yeah, he's done all that.
It just encourages them. You know, appeasing them just encourages them. There's no reason not to be out there fighting for what we want rather than giving them 90% of what they want, hoping that will satisfy them. It won't.
Well, there is a huge there is quite a list of things that Obama and I hope with some Democrat Party support in the elected in Congress, closing down Gitmo, set up a deadline, a schedule for withdrawal from Iraq. And then he's done a whole number of things. He's that are to his credit, but we still
like what?
Well, I mean, he's well. You tell me, what has he done? Not done.
Well, I mean, you can't start a list of good things with closing Guantanamo since he has not closed Guantanamo. Of course, not with any help from the senators of Kansas. But in the broad picture of the structure of the presidency and the Congress and the courts that will be left behind to the next president and the next president, he's not fixing anything, right? So he could have come in and thrown out Bush's signing statements that unconstitutionally alter laws. Instead, he said he would have his Justice Department look at each one on a case-by-case basis if they came up and presumably secretly decide which ones he liked and which ones he didn't like because he's the new emperor. And he began issuing his own new signing statements in the same manner. Same with executive orders, same with supporting this idea that you can make laws with secret memos. Taking a blatant crime like torture or aggressive war or warrantless spying and making it legal. He has fought to extend beyond Bush and Cheney's wildest dreams the claims of state secrecy in terms of power to keep things secret, to protect those involved in the warrantless spying and the torture and so forth. He's using as legal cover for the occupation of Iraq an unconstitutional treaty never ratified by the Senate, to which he objected when he was in the Senate. If you look at the power to make laws, the power to make wars, the power to make treaties and so forth, all of the power has moved to the White House, and Obama is only cementing it in place so that it was Bush and Cheney who threw out habeas corpus, but it's Obama who's coming in and formalizing that and putting down on paper a system of pretended due process for people to whom we are denying the right to a trial. This is something that Bush and Cheney alone could not have done. Now, there are good things that President Obama has done. There certainly are. In fact, today's or yesterday's decision announced not to go forward with this so-called missile defense system in Poland and the Czech Republic is hugely positive and is being spun by the U.S. corporate media as a victory for Russia, whereas when they were promoting these things, Russia supposedly had nothing to do with it. This was to protect Europe from Iran and Korea and presumably Martians, but not Russia. And yet we aren't being told one word about the fact that the people of the Czech Republic got organized, got the mayors of all of their cities to go to the legislature, educated the public, went on hunger strikes, overthrew the government, blocked this thing through nonviolent, organized public action. We aren't going to be told that, because that would empower us to consider doing the same kind of thing.
Wow. Well, then, all right. So you're saying that your book Daybreak is not a pro-Obama short sheet, you know, where you can look at it.
My book is an anti-president sheet. Our founders of this nation had overthrown a monarchy. They devoted the first 60% of our Constitution and 90% of the powers in it to the Congress. They wanted an executive who would be very, very weak, who would enforce the will of the Congress, who was empowered to sign a bill or veto it, not to rewrite it, not to invent his own laws. And I don't care what you know, letter of the alphabet you stick after a president's name. To have a president able to write laws is absolutely disastrous. If you think you've got a president you like and he's going to be a benevolent dictator for 4 years, great. Are you going to like the next one and the next one and the next one? Are you always going to want complete dictatorial power to belong to one man or woman, and you're going to have faith in each and every one of them for the rest of our lives? I don't think so. I think we need power in a branch of government that we can conceivably get some influence over, and that's the House of Representatives.
Well, okay. Well, now, Joe Wilson – a big deal been made about Bill Wilson saying, you lie in the middle of the union speech before the joint chambers last week.
Right.
Well, would you think he should have been censored or a resolution of disapproval passed against him?
Well, in an ideal world, we would have a communication system of media outlets, of local and independent and national nonprofit and public media outlets that would actually report the news so that everyone would know that he was actually wrong. Because, you know, to go through these endless stories about whether it was appropriate or not for him to call the president a liar during a speech, and all of these stories that ignore the fundamental question of whether he was right or not. Well, he was wrong, and in an ideal world, he would be so ashamed by the journalism reporting that he was wrong that he would apologize for having been wrong. Whether Congress should have passed this resolution of disapproval blaming him for bringing discredit on the Congress, I don't know. The Prime Minister of England stands before the Parliament and is questioned with hostile questions from those who disagree with him. And the people of England don't consider that traumatic.
Yeah.
They consider it representative of their views. Their fundamental desire is not for harmony in the Parliament. It's for better laws for their nation. I think progressives ought to have been questioning things that Obama said in his speech, which went far more toward catering to the right than to the left. And I think the idea that some jackass like Congressman Wilson shouting out of turn can bring discredit on an institution that responsible for funding these wars, responsible for failing to provide us with health coverage, failing to provide us with the right to organize in the workplace, failing to impeach an open criminal like George W. Bush or Dick Cheney, you can't discredit any further an institution like Congress by shouting something in a session. I think it's a rather minor offense.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, I have watched Prime Minister Questions, and I always like it. It's sort of great stuff on CNN.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder why we don't have...
It looks democratic.
Well, when Bush was president, I thought that he should be drugged down there every week himself and have to stand in the well and answer questions for an hour every week. It wouldn't be bad. And I think, again, I was wondering about what you thought about that, because you hear there was the lineup of the vote on the resolution of disapproval on Wilson was interesting, because several Democrats voted no, and it was pointed out on one of the television stations, Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich both voted no. They voted.
I haven't talked with either one of them about why, but presumably they don't think a president should be a king, and they think it should be permissible to question a president.
Right. Yeah. Now,
the president is supposed to be the servant of Congress. Congress is not supposed to be a bunch of court jesters playing at the feet of the president.
Right.
That's a reversal.
So the thrust of your book, again, is what's the more perfect union then? What's that part? Can you sort of summarize some of that?
Well, it's a long book. I can't do it in a minute, but we need a system where we have verifiable elections, where we know we're electing who we meant to vote for, where we have a communication system that is open and provides meaningful freedom of the press, including good shows like this one, where we have a system of funding for campaigns that is not corrupted by corporate and private money, where we have the possibility of electing Congress members and other officials who are not beholden to a party, where you don't have to pick one party or the other and have them answerable to their party leaders, but you could conceivably have them answerable to their constituents, who they're supposed to be representing, and a system of government where powers are restored to a legislature that now represents us. I mean, that's our only hope. You know, it's always nice to think we have, you know, we have a little bit better emperor than, you know, the crazy idiot from Texas that we had last time. But that's not going to save us.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the House of Representatives, you think there's going to be some change, sea change in this, in the attitudes of the House now that they, do you think they feel, the Democratic Party feels emboldened to do anything? Do you think they'll do anything? I mean, where do you think we're going with this? I mean, what's it going to take, Mr. Swanson? What do you think?
Well, lousy as the House may be, the Senate is always the blocking point, and the filibuster is always the worst spot therein, right? You have this rule in the Senate that says senators who represent 12% of us can block all legislation in the Senate, and therefore in the House as well. And that's where you always have to get around trying to pass a bill. The filibuster, believe it or not, is not in our Constitution. It's not even in the Bible. It's just a rule. And 51 senators could throw it out tomorrow, and they could pass serious health care reform. They could pass the Employee Free Choice Act. They could pass anything they like. They choose not to. Now, the House could conceivably pass better bills, even in its rotten current state, on all such issues, better bills than would pass the Senate. So the Senate is the weak link. Ideally, as I lay out in the book, we would amend the Constitution to get rid of the Senate. It doesn't do anybody any good. But very, very conceivably, in the near term, we could get them to change the rule and toss out the filibuster. And not to have some radical minority rule, but to go back to what we had for a good part of our nation's history, a Senate without the filibuster, in which a majority of senators decides what passes the Senate.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I didn't know that about the filibuster not being in the – I knew it wasn't in the Bible.
Well, you're ahead of Glenn Beck, right? Well, the filibuster in the early years of the Republic, you know, they would have a vote on whether to have a vote. And somebody decided, well, let's do away with that. We'll just have a vote. It then became possible, if you were willing to talk forever,
uh-huh,
to prevent a vote. They later, you know, formalized it and systematized it, and they've changed the number various times over the years. But
uh-oh,
at this point, it's 41. If you have 41 senators willing to say, I'll filibuster, they don't have to lift their little finger, they don't have to get up and give a speech, they don't have to read the encyclopedia, they just have to say, I'll do it. If you have 41 of those, nothing moves. And they don't reserve it for extreme circumstances. They use it all the time.
Oh.
So you now have a situation where 51 senators doesn't get you anything. You have to have 60. You have to have 60, 6-0. Which is why I, for one, received some tens of thousands of emails in recent years saying, give money to the Democratic Party, because if they have 60 senators, there will be peace, joy, and harmony in the land.
Yeah.
Well, they now have 60 senators. I mean, they got to replace Kennedy and so forth, but they're right there, and nothing has changed. They still blame everything on the Republicans. They're still unwilling to move forward. They won't throw out the filibuster rule because they like having it there. They like the excuse that they can't do anything and they can blame it on the Republicans, and they want the filibuster rule for some future age in which the Republicans are in the majority so that the Democrats can fight off majority opinion in this incredibly anti-democratic manner because Republicans are in charge. Well, there's absolutely no excuse for that. And by keeping that around, they're guaranteeing that, in fact, the Republicans will get back in charge because the Democrats aren't doing anything. You give the Democrats big majorities in both houses and you give them the White House and they choose not to do anything. You know, I don't care how much you blame it on the filibuster. Nobody's going to be satisfied with that. And some people are going to be so stupid that they decide that what they need to do is switch back to Republicans. They're not doing themselves any favors, and they're not doing us any favors. You want to ask your senators to do something, you know, say, thank you for keeping out the scary Muslims. Now will you throw out the scary filibuster because it's at least as scary.
Oh my God. Well, it sounds like you're saying this book is this book might be of interest to Republicans, at least the ones that can read.
That's it. Yeah, that's always a problem. Glenn Beck's book is very short, very small words. But, you know, a lot of people who read that stuff and like it are overworked, don't have time to read longer books, and don't know any better and hear that kind of stuff on their televisions over and over and over again. And there are bits and pieces of it that make sense. And so the insane parts sort of blend in and start to become okay. But I have talked about my book and my ideas with Republicans, with libertarians, with people who are too mad to be anything. And there's lots of common ground. You know, 90% of us oppose these banker bailouts.
Yeah.
When Bush did them and when Obama did them, 90% of us. If 90% of us oppose something and it still goes ahead in Congress, that can't be the fault of just the evil right-wing neocons or just the crazy commie socialists. It has to be a problem with our system of government, and people need to stop and think about what's wrong there.
Yeah, that's for sure. You got it. You know, you're hitting on all cylinders here now with me, and I know with some of my more conservative listeners out here, they're thinking about that. They're wondering now, how did that get through? You know, they leaped into the Tea Party thing. We'll have a backyard barbecue and turns into a political mud wrestling match in the backyard, because basically I keep reminding them, I said, well, Bush did the first big bailout, and that wasn't right either. And the wars are still going on. And, you know, what's it going to take to stop this? The empire is just churning along, and, we both get upset with that. At that point, the mud wrestling stops, and we sort of look at each other and wonder, what the hell are we fighting over at certain times? Now, I know that, but in all honesty, it sounds like your book, Daybreak, that might be worth some of my friends reading. I think it might be worth, I think we need to get a crate of your books out here in North Jefferson County, Kansas. I'll tell you that. Really?
Well, I agree, and I want to hear what people think who disagree or aren't sure they agree. I don't need to hear from people who say, yes, great, I believe everything. You know, I want to hear what other people are thinking. So that means we can't, you know, Fox News viewers can't just read Glenn Beck, and Air America listeners can't just read me. You know, we have to talk to each other.
Excellent. Now, you're going to continue on. I want you to promise me as you continue with your tour that we get you on live sometime in the future before your tour is over with, and we'll take callers in. I couldn't do it last night as much as I wanted to, but would you consider coming on live and taking some calls from my local callers?
Absolutely. That would be great. And make sure it's people who already read the book, and then we'll know what we're talking about.
Well, we will. And for listeners' information, the books are available at Aquarius Bookstore, roughly 39th and Broadway in Kansas City, Missouri. There'll be some copies there on the shelves, right, after you're gone?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Aquarius, folks, Aquarius Bookstore in Kansas City, Missouri. And you can also get it through Amazon. And probably the best way is to go to davidswanson.org and check out his website. There's excerpts there of the book, and it's a great read what I've read of it, and we'll start a little readers club out here on this book and get something going, and we'll get David, Mr. Swanson, back on. Oh, thank you, Mr. Swanson.
That's terrific. Oh.
Folks, I'm going to play. I've just got just enough time to play something I'm sure you missed. It's
We're going to go back to Mike, to Brad Friedman, guest hosting Mike Malloy's show. And he had Ray McGovern on the Thursday of the week that he guest hosted the show. The reason I want you to check this part out is because McGovern, Mr. McGovern, has consented to do another interview with me. And this will bring you up to some speed on where Mr. McGovern's at. Here we go, Brad Friedman on Mike Malloy with Ray McGovern.
Truth Seekers, it is I once again, Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Glad to be here, glad to have you with us, coast to coast and around the globe. Yeah, I'm Brad from bradblog.com. Love you to stop on by our chat room over there tonight and participate in the festivities, if you can call them that. It has been a hell of a week, and I'm here all week long sitting in for Mike. Mike and Kathy will be back next Monday, never fear. They're doing well, just enjoying some time off. Although, did you notice the time that they took off? Well, first it was Labor Day, so I had to work on Labor Day. And then Wednesday, Obama's big speech, we had to do live coverage all night long. Well, we didn't have to. We wanted to. It was a crazy night. And tomorrow, 8th anniversary of 9/11. Should be an interesting show. I'll give you some a couple of teasers as we move forward as far as what we've got planned for tomorrow, but I'll tell you, he picked a hell of a week to leave me here, didn't he? We are broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank, lovely and sunny here in the studios of K-Talk AM 1150. You can give us a call as the hour moves on, as the show moves on, at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And as I said, a hella big show tonight. I mean, a hella big show. Coming up momentarily, Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, used to give the presidential daily briefings to George Bush Sr. So if you ever had a question for a CIA guy, now's your chance to get it in at 877-520-1150. We're going to talk about the torture investigations. We're going to find out if, in fact, torture investigations really would demoralize the CIA. Sure, they may have broke the law, but we can't possibly investigate and prosecute. It would make them sad. We're also going to talk about the new CIA director, Leon Panetta, who I believe should resign given his obstruction or attempted obstruction into the investigation into torture. Coming up later, Ernest Hancock, libertarian, who you may have heard made some news a week or two ago. Ernest, who I've known for a while, brought a gun to a town hall meeting out there in Phoenix, Arizona. You may have heard about the guy that he was with. Chris is his name. He's the one who brought the assault rifle. Ernie just had a sidearm. He was a big Ron Paul guy. I'm going to ask him what the hell he was thinking. And then, later on in the show, in our third hour, Call the Kids and Wake the Neighbors, we're going to be playing for the first time on the air, on the broadcast air, the first time anywhere, extended clips from the deposition, the under oath deposition, the shocking, frankly, under oath deposition of FBI translator turned whistleblower, Sybelle Edmonds. She gave a remarkable deposition about a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, the very beginning of August. It was released 2 weeks later in full, including on video, the entire transcript, the video. We ran it on bradblog.com. The allegations she makes of bribery and blackmail of current and former U.S. Congress members are stunning. The sale of nuclear secrets to the black market, as some of these officials, high-ranking officials at the State and Defense Department, not only participated in it, oversaw it, participated in it, she alleges. And, of course, she has some 9/11 things to say as well. But we are talking about infiltration of the U.S. government at the highest levels, some of our highest officials. She is an FBI translator who was listening to wiretaps of targets at the FBI, folks who were suspected of all of these things. And she was gagged twice by the George W. Bush administration. They used the rarely invoked draconian state secrets privilege to shut her up. So she hasn't been able to talk for years. Finally, she was deposed in a case in Ohio, and the Obama administration did not shut her up. And she answered all the questions, and the answers were absolutely stunning. We're going to play extended excerpts from that deposition for the first time on the air anywhere in the third hour, focusing largely on the congressional corruption. Yes, she names names. Yes, they are names that you will know, and you will want to tune in for that. So as I say, call the kids and wake the neighbors. Big enough show for you? If not, tomorrow, 9/11, 8th anniversary, we're going to have John Farmer. He's got a new book out called Ground Truth. John Farmer was the senior counsel, one of the senior counsels on the 9/11 Commission. And he's alleging that what the government and the military officials told the public and the commission was almost, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. Mind you, this is a member of the 9/11 Commission saying that what the public was told and what the commission was told by officials, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. We're going to ask him about that. No matter what Glenn Beck thinks about it. What do you think of that? Because after all, if we take Glenn Beck's advice, he tells us we should, well, what does he say?
America, if you want answers to reasonable questions in this unreasonable time, stand up.
Okay.
Come on, follow me.
We're not going to follow you, Glenn, but we are going to ask reasonable questions in what are unreasonable times, no matter what the hell you say about it, even though you lied and said you wanted people to ask reasonable questions. You didn't, because when Van Jones, of course, Obama's Green Jobs advisor, dared to ask reasonable questions. He didn't even dare to ask. He just signed a petition that, along with family members of 9/11 victims, asking some pretty reasonable questions. You know, things like, why did the CIA, why did the Secret Service allow George W. Bush to sit there for so long after he had heard that we were under attack on 9/11? Seems like a reasonable question to me, not apparently to Glenn Beck. That, despite what he has to say, about
I told you yesterday that there are three principles that this show is going to drum through in the next week. In
drum fact, through, he means lie.
It may be our mantra for a very long time.
By mantra, he means
question
our lie.
Question with boldness. It's something that changed my life that Thomas Jefferson said. Question.
Really?
Honest questioning.
Really? Did that change
question
your life?
With boldness. Then the second step is,
unless
once
you're Van
you
Jones,
find
of course.
The truth, whatever it is, hold to it. Hold to the truth. And the third one,
unless it's the truth you don't like.
Without fear.
Without
fear.
If
you truly ask what Thomas Jefferson called honest questions with a sincere heart.
What will happen?
I have
You'll
found
be railroaded,
that the answers
lynched?
In all aspects of your life may take you to a very uncomfortable place.
Really? Like what?
Tonight, they're going to take you, and this week, they're going to take you to places that you don't want to go.
What? Like the president is,
nobody
is a bad guy?
Nobody wants to think that our president is a bad guy.
Oh. What?
When you hear evidence to the contrary, you have a decision to make.
Do you?
Will you bury your head in the sand, refusing to believe because it doesn't fit your political agenda,
uh-huh.
or it just doesn't fit with your comfort level?
Uh-huh. Comfort
or
level, Glenn.
Will you hold to the truth, whatever it is,
uh-huh.
so you can be part of the solution and not an enabler to the problem?
Thank you. I will hold to the truth.
We must look at our country
Good
not
idea.
As today's politics, but the future place where our children will grow up.
Uh-huh.
Will they be free?
Okay. Good advice. Good advice from Glenn Beck there. Ask questions. Hold to the truth. Question with boldness, as Thomas Jefferson said. Unfortunately, Glenn Beck turned around and ran a guy, railroaded him out of office. because he dared to ask questions. By the way, Thomas Jefferson's full quote was, question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. He must more approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Question with boldness even the existence of a God. Unless you're on Fox News, don't question the existence of a God. Don't question what happened on 9/11, even though one of the commissioners says that what we were told was simply untrue. So I'm going to take the opportunity, hopefully tomorrow, to ask John Farmer, the senior counsel of the 9/11 Commission, some of those questions that Glenn Beck found so incredibly inappropriate. And as he said, made Van Jones dangerous. And he said, well, the FBI, they must be, the FBI is incompetent to allow Van Jones that close to the president. Oh, really? Someone over at Fox News is incompetent to let you that close to a television camera, Glenn Beck. They're not incompetent. They're just cynical bastards, and they don't give a damn about the public airwaves. We do, so we're going to ask questions here tonight with Ray McGovern in a moment, Ernie Hancock after that, and Sybelle Edmonds' remarkable deposition. And your calls, all ahead, right here on the Mike Malloy Program. I'm Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike. Stick with us. Days indeed. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Thanks for joining us. We've got Ray McGovern momentarily. Wanted to remind folks, stop by the chat room at bradblog.com. If you go to the very top item and you click on click here for the chat room, then you'll be brought in there. Agent 99 is keeping an eye on things there, and looks like all the gang is there. It's a very lively discussion over there, so jump on over and say hello. All right, we're joined by Ray McGovern. Fellow who I've gotten to know him over the years, spoke to him originally back in the deep, dark days of the Bush presidency, Bush Jr. Remember that? Ray McGovern is a 27-year CIA analyst. He writes for, among other places, Consortium News, Op-Ed News. He also serves on the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. Great to have you with us, Ray. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Brad. Good to be with you.
Now, we did talk back in the dark days. It felt like dark days back then. The sun is out a little bit more these days, but frankly, not a whole lot. We're going to talk about some of that. Before we do, though, Ray, give us a quick idea. As a CIA analyst for 27 years, what did you do? You actually briefed George Bush Sr., did you not?
Yes. I worked prominently on two publications that are sort of the supreme genre of the intelligence product. One's called The President's Daily Brief, and the other one is called The National Intelligence Estimate. During Nixon and during Ford, I helped prepare the President's Daily Brief. It's a short, maybe 8-9 page document prepared 6 days a week, done the day before, updated overnight. In those days, we used to send it off to the White House without any real personal contact with the people who would be reading it. When Ronald Reagan came into office, we had already approached him out in Pacific Palisades and got him pretty much interested in this kind of treatment. So when he came into office, he said, now, George Bush, you and Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, my national security assistant, I want you all to get the same treatment that I've been getting, even as just president-elect. And George Bush said, great, great, that's what I advocate. Now, do you want to be included? And Reagan said, well, I don't know, it's awful early. I'll tell you what, why don't you guys come brief me at 11 after you've gotten the poop from these one-on-one experts? So that's the way it worked out. Very rarely do we see the president, but we saw all these other individuals 6 days a week, Saturdays at their homes, and we worked in teams. So every other day, every other morning, I'd be seeing some combination of the vice president, secretary of state, secretary of defense, assistant to the president for national security affairs. And then we took the initiative to add the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because we thought that he, too, should be advised of what the president is being told every morning, 6 days a week. So that was really heady duty. It was in those days we were experienced analysts, so we were trusted. And it was one-on-one, and never did we in our wildest dreams think that a director would eventually decide to come down and stand behind us or behind the president as we briefed. That's what Tenet, of course, succeeded in doing in order to get more face time with President Bush. And you can imagine what a dampening effect, chilling effect that would have.
That would have a chilling
candor.
That would certainly have a chilling effect on candor, having your boss there. Also, I remember years ago you told me that Dick Cheney had come down to CIA, that was unprecedented to have a vice president actually coming down to the CIA headquarters and, again, looking over folks' shoulders like that. Got to get to a break. We're going to ask you about CIA, the investigation into torture. But if I don't even know if we have time for this one. But my question was, in your day, had you given a presidential daily briefing like the one that Bush got in August of 2001, saying that, you know, an enemy was about to attack the country, would there have been a reaction different than the one you ended up seeing? And I don't know if you can, when George Bush was there?
Well, very briefly, we know what Bush said. He turned to the briefer and said, okay, you've covered your ass now. You can go. That was the attitude. Yeah. Lots of what happened when I get back to headquarters, I tell you.
So this was not the way it used to work. Well, let's hope it doesn't work that way anymore with Obama in there. But we're going to talk about Obama, what he's doing. Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, much more with him and a big show ahead. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. Mike Malloy program, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy will be back on Monday. We are speaking with 27-year CIA analyst, now former CIA analyst, Ray McGovern. A lot of stuff I want to talk about with Ray. We'd love to take your questions as well if you'd like to ask Ray. 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. 1150. We talked a bit. We did a bit of hammering on the previous administration. We're probably going to do more in a second on the use of torture by the CIA, the investigation into that. But this may gore the ox of the Obama administration a little bit, because when the news came out that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, was preparing to investigate the previous administration's use of torture, reportedly, Leon Panetta, the new CIA director, threw a few fits. Apparently, he went over to the DOJ, tried to get them to not investigate. Reportedly, he had a shouting match with Rahm Emanuel, trying to get them to not investigate. It seems to me that this is not unlike what happened with the U.S. attorney purge, where you had these high-ranking officials calling up the Justice Department, calling up U.S. attorneys, calling up the White House and Karl Rove, and asking them either to investigate so-and-so or asking them, please don't investigate so-and-so if he happens to be a Republican. I found that was inappropriate then. I find it inappropriate now that Leon Panetta used his insider position to try to stop a lawful investigation into the illegal practice, the atrocious practice of torture. And I think he ought to step down. I think progressives ought to call for Panetta to step down the way we called for these other guys to step down when they obstructed justice. Ray McGovern, am I out of line in making that call when it comes to Leon Panetta?
Well, Panetta has been a terrific disappointment. He came with a fairly good reputation for integrity, and the notion was that he would actually become the CIA director. In other words, you know, somebody who would actually sort of, would you say, direct the agency, you know?
Well, that's his job, is it not?
Well, not if he's a creature of Congress. And that was the real tip-off for me. When he was doing his nomination proceedings, he sort of winked at them all and said, you know, I'm a creature of Congress first and foremost.
Hmm.
Well, that's the kiss of death. What does that mean? That means that you're not an intelligence officer and never will be. It means that you shave and you cut and you kind of bob and weave and you make compromises and you work something out. That's not what intelligence is all about.
Did he say that to the folks at the CIA when he came into the job?
He said that to the Senate committee that was approving his nomination.
I see, then I'm a creature of Congress.
You know, we were all watching it on TV.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that these folks that were ordering and orchestrating and approving the torture,
mm-hmm.
guess where they are now?
Where are they?
They're his senior staff, the head of his operation.
So there has been no accountability.
The deputy chief. Not only that, but John Brennan, one of Director Tenet's chief lieutenants, he found his way down into a very influential post in the National Security Council after being denied a position where the Senate would have to confirm him, namely CIA director or something like that. So what do we have here? We have the foxes in charge of the chicken coop, and we have Leon Panetta not acting as a director, but rather acting as a lawyer. He's arguing the case of these guys that, you know, the stakes are very, very large here, Brad.
Yeah.
Crimes have been committed. These, you know, the Cheneys of this world are trying to dismiss this as bona fide differences on policy.
Policy difference, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, torture is not a policy. Torture is a crime, okay? Torture is against the law, international as well as domestic law. 18 U.S.C., U.S.C. is not University of South Southern
right.
California.
Right, U.S. Code.
U.S.
Penal
Criminal
Code,
code right? 18 U.S.C. 2441, the War Crimes Act, passed by a predominantly Republican legislature in 1996, okay? That's one of the laws that they can't get around. Now, let me just
add to that, Ray, by the way, the U.N. Treaty on Torture, and I know a lot of people say, well, let's avoid the U.N., they don't make our laws. Well, in fact, Ronald Reagan signed that U.N. Torture Convention, and that is a treaty. And as Article 6 of the Constitution says, that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the U.S. shall be the supreme law of the land.
Right.
So there's no question about the legal issues here. If they committed torture, it's illegal, period.
Sure. That's the so-called supremacy clause, and it applies not only to the Convention Against Torture, but to all the other Geneva agreements, and we have the Supreme Court endorsing that concept. So what I was about to say is just to take half a step back and say, yeah, torture is wrong because it's against the law, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, there are laws against torture, but torture isn't wrong because it's against the law. The laws are there because torture is wrong.
Right.
And the whole civilized world agreed on that after World War II when some of these atrocities happened. And up until the George W. Bush administration, everyone sort of agreed that torture was beyond the pale and certainly not as a matter of public policy. So so we have a bunch of fellows now who worked for George Tenet And we have Tenet himself sweating it out because he's demonstrably guilty of perjury as well as other things. You know, never mind torture, rendition, kidnapping, putting people in black holes without telling their wives or children, much less the Red Cross, you know.
Wait, no. Who did you say was guilty of perjury and all of this?
George Tenet.
Oh, Tenet. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
See, there was a kind of a Faustian bargain struck. And when people wonder why George Tenet, this relates to 9/11, so it might be sort of timely given what's coming up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
George Tenet had indeed warned and warned and warned that something really big was up. He tried to get Condoleezza Rice to tell the president. I don't know why he didn't tell the president himself. He saw him six mornings a week.
That's right, he was there.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that's his excuse. You know, he had his hair on fire by all accounts. And Richard Clarke and other people do substantiate that. He was really worried that something's going to happen. You referred before to the president's daily brief of August 6, 2001. You know, August 6, what's that, 5 weeks before 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the title of that? Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., okay? And what did the president do? He went and watched a Little League baseball game. He didn't even take the – he didn't even ask people to lock the cockpit doors, for God's sake. And that's what the Israelis did years and years before that. All he had to do – it cost $700 to put a secure lock on the cockpit doors. Nobody could get in. That would have thwarted a lot of this stuff. So nothing was done. He didn't know what to do. Condoleezza Rice didn't know what to do. So nothing was done. So then 9/11 happens, okay? Now, uh-oh. Here's the Director of Central Intelligence with 34 urgent priority memos for the president warning that something like this is just about to happen, never mind the president's daily brief of August 6th. And, you know, directors of Central Intelligence keep a little disc of all this stuff, you know. And so Bush is really worried. And he goes to George Tenet and he says, George, I know you told me something like this is going to happen. But, you know, we don't need to go into that. I know you're very embarrassed because people think that you're responsible. And to a degree, you were because of all these things that fell through the cracks. So let's make a deal here. I won't fire you, George, if you do what I say and destroy that little disc that you have of all your warnings. Now, George Tenet breathed a great big sigh of relief, sir. That's a great deal. And before you knew it, 13 days after 9/11, George Bush is out at CIA headquarters with his arm around George Tenet saying, we have the best intelligence service in the world, and largely because of the staff here and George Tenet, who is my man, okay? This, after the worst intelligence disaster and policy disaster, at least since Pearl Harbor. So what does that mean? Well, that means that George Tenet was doing the president's bidding no matter what he asked him to do. Mm. Torture? Yeah, sure. Yes, sir, I can torture. We don't have any interrogators, but I'll round up some. We'll do whatever you want. And not only that, and we get to the perjury now. Before the 9/11 commission, here's George Tenet being sworn in with John McLaughlin, his deputy, okay? And he's asked by Timothy Romer is one of the commissioners. And he says, you know, I'd be interested in what you told the president during that critical month of August 2001.
Right.
You know. And so Tenet says, well, you know, I didn't talk to him at all. And Romer says, you never talked to him? And Ted says, no, I was at some leave, and of course the president was out there in Crawford. And Romer says, well, not even on telephone? No, okay. Now, what happens? That evening, after all the TV cameras are turned off, one of Tenet's little PR people calls the commission and says, you know, George Tenet misspoke. Actually, he did go and brief the president, actually out in Crawford on August the 17th. And then he, you know, he saw him again at the end of August when George Bush came back to town. And, You know, he just misspoke, okay?
So,
now, why did he misspeak? Because he didn't want to, because he was fulfilling his part of the deal, Brad.
Yeah, he was trying to cover his ass in this deal that...
Well, cover Bush's ass is what's going on here.
Right.
Because, you know, it's really strange. This guy didn't have many smarts. He writes his memoirs, right?
Yeah.
He talks about, on August the 17th, I went out to Crawford. Oh, man, it was such a revelation, such a great time. I got driven around by the president in his little...
So in his own book, George Tenet revealed his own perjury.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because we're going to have to come up on a break here very momentarily. You say that Tenet destroyed a disc with 34 warning memos on it. Do we know this? How do we know that he destroyed this disc?
I was speaking figuratively here.
Okay,
What he did was agree to destroy his memory about all the...
I see.
And, of course, Richard Clark knows full well, and you look in Richard Clark's books, and you'll see how many times Bush was...
I'm going to pin you down. I want to get an answer on this torture thing and whether it's appropriate. It certainly sounds appropriate to investigate, but whether Panetta was wrong to try to block it and whether it will demoralize the CIA. We're speaking with... CIA, 27-year CIA veteran, Ray McGovern, much more straight ahead, including Sybelle Edmonds, later tonight. Brad, here on The Malloy Show. All right, Brad, back on the Malloy program, broadcasting live from Los Angeles for the next couple of several hours. Ernest Hancock coming up in the next hour, Desi Doyen with the Green News, and yes, Wake the Kids and the Neighbors, Sybelle Edmonds' unheard testimony. Unheard because no one else in the media has picked it up. We're going to play extended excerpts from her extraordinary deposition given a few weeks ago, the former FBI translator. We're speaking with Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, gave presidential briefs directly to folks like George Bush Sr. And Ray, I'm going to push you to be quick with your answers here because we've got just a couple of minutes, and I want to see if I can get in a call here. But on the CIA, was it appropriate, in your opinion, for Panetta to try to block this lawful investigation into torture by Eric Holder's investigation? Is that the appropriate thing for a CIA director to do?
Well, you and I know that it's not appropriate if he's director, if he's the agent, if he sees his role as the agency's lawyer, which apparently he does, then there's nothing unlawful about him pleading their special causes. The stakes are very high here. His main advisors and his senior staff are liable for prosecution for war crimes. The war crimes statute includes very severe penalties, including capital punishment, for those if under their custody detainees die, and we know that at least 100 have. So this is big stakes here. And let me just leave you with this thought, and that is that I think that Panetta and, to a degree, President Obama are afraid. I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, but I think they're afraid of the CIA. And you look in history. You look to that incredible book written recently by Jim Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. He makes a very, very persuasive case that it was President Kennedy's the animosity that built up between him and the CIA after the Bay of Pigs and the Joint Chiefs of Staff because he was reaching out to the Russians and so forth and so on. It's a very well-researched book, and his conclusion is very alarming. And so if you're asking why Obama and Panetta are going very, very kid glovish with the CIA, I think part of the reason, part of the explanation is they're afraid of these guys because these guys have a whole lot to lose if justice takes its course. And that's why I think Attorney General Holder is to be applauded. I'm really just delighted to have somebody from the Bronx, where I grew up, try to do something to wipe out the blot that Colin Powell has put on the Bronx.
Even though it's a narrow investigation, you still applaud it, but Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, you're saying that there is reason to be concerned about the CIA, that Barack Obama should be concerned. Having been there 27 years, I guess you know what you're talking about, but that's a chilling thought, I got to say, Ray.
Well, read the book, James Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. You know, Brad, as you probably know, there are two CIAs, okay? The one that was set up by Truman to give him the straight scoop without any fear or favor, and then this covert action arm, which really doesn't belong in this agency, but is the one that is entitled, so to speak, by one sentence in the National Security Act of 1947, which says the director of Central